Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sidney Wildsmith.
Wolves come face to face with the humans with whom a range war has been waged for 100 years. Coming face to face with wolves is different than coming face to face with any other animal. We see into each other's worlds. The common history, which has bound us in the past, finds new expression when Living with Wolves continues on your Voice of the Earth here on the Wildside News.
Well, I wish we had a lot more time to carry on this conversation with Jim and Jamie Dutcher, who are talking to us now from Ketchum, Idaho. They have been videographers and recordists and a team who've been creating films and documentaries about the wild creatures. And their most recent book is Living with Wolves, which is put out by the Mountaineers Books. Great folks who really bring out some of the best. And we're continuing this conversation about wolves. You know, I'm trained as a biologist and quite honest, and as a scientist, therefore, and I have a quiet war with the scientists because I feel that although they've done many, many things to document and to record, and quite honestly, the base studies in terms of populations and things of that nature have really served us well in many, many regards because we can document the populations increasing or decreasing and everything else. But there's one side to it that bothers me a little bit. And that is that sometimes when you're in a mixed crowd with the scientific and the non-scientific communities, the scientists turn their eyes up a little bit and suggest that when we start talking about these animals and their feelings or their thoughts or their intelligence, they don't really want to accept that. And I think that's doing harm to the survival of creatures. You're having lived this closely with these animals. Let's talk about what you were able to perceive in terms of their intelligence, their wisdom, and what they have to teach us.
You know, because we are not, Jim and I are not scientists, it gave us the opportunity to watch these wolves with fresh eyes and without any preconceived scientific notion. And it is a shame to not be able to, or to not allow yourself to give feelings to these animals. We observe them in a certain way, we see certain things, and we have no other way to express it or talk about it than our own emotions, and to think that, you know, we are the only creatures on this planet with the gift of emotions, I think is incredibly naive. But we were privy to a wide array of emotions and feelings, from the mourning that we saw when pack members passed away, to the camaraderie, to the friendship, to the care. It just went on and on, and you couldn't help but watch these animals every day and not see yourself, your friends, you know, just human nature within these creatures.
What were some of the types of emotions or intelligence that really stood out?
Well, when we had to move the wolves at the end of our project, our Forest Service permits expired and we couldn't keep them on the land near Stanley. We made a deal with the Nez Perce tribes, and I formed a foundation, and we took them and sedated them and put them in carrying crates to take them up to a new enclosure, which was about 10 hours away to the north. And what really struck out, it's almost the last message these wolves gave me before I had to say goodbye, which was incredibly sad, is that how much they care about each other. When we opened the crates and let various wolves out, we started with the puppies, then we let the alpha out, and we held the omega wolf until the very end. And we didn't think that he should get out before any mid-ranking wolves, because he might have gotten picked on. So it came time, we had all the doors of the crates open, all the pack was out except the omega. And he was holding back. He was afraid to come out of the crate. And the pack, the alpha was leading the pack, and they were about to take off to explore this new territory. And he went back, the Alpha did. He went back to his brother, who was still in the crate, the Omega, and they whined to each other, back and forth, back and forth, and finally, the Coda, the Omega, had the nerve to come out shoulder to shoulder with his brother into this new territory.
Hmm.
And I thought that that was such an amazing experience that this wolf would not, this Alpha, this leader, would not lead his pack onto an new territory and explore without his full pack together, without his brother.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah, that was a very poignant moment.
And in contrast to this, when wolves were introduced into this state, we saw photographs, and it was just tragic because there was this picture of a wolf being pulled out of a crate with a rabies collar, you know, the pole with a loop on the end, and it was probably just afraid. And the scientist or whoever was, you know, working on this with probably the best intentions to get all the wolves together, they were pulling this wolf out of the crate. It was growling with it, snarling with its teeth because it was so afraid. And this is the image that was on all the covers of the newspapers out here. And it didn't make sense to me until later on exactly what was happening then when I saw what happened with our own pack.
Mm-hmm. There are wolf packs emerging in certain states in the United States, but they are increasing in numbers, and certainly the Yellowstone pack has been successful. But let's reach out now and talk a little bit about the future of wolves and how you see, for example, the research and your opportunities to spend time with wolves, how you think that can be used to help nurture the health of the wolves into America's future.
Generally, wolf reintroduction has been very successful. And actually, we were personally not for wolf reintroduction, only because we've gotten to know these packs of animals so well and know how bonded they are to their families. The idea of breaking families up in Canada, you know, and transplanting them down here was very tragic for us. But, you know, of course, the reintroduction was going forward, and we, of course, we're supporting it, and Yellowstone is a prime example of how unbelievably wonderful it is. And I think in order for the whole thing to be really successful is we need to allow these wolves to be wolves. You know, I know that there's a desire to constantly radio collar and keep track of them, and they're caught in leg hold traps to do that. We need to, if some wolves are going to get in trouble, they're going to have to get in trouble. But we need to give them the opportunity to let them be wolves. Wolves are going to leave the park. You know, they can't read the boundaries. And we're hoping that through our work and what we've learned, hoping to transmit that to other people to realize, you know, yes, these are top predators, but they're not bloodthirsty killers, the beasts of our dreams and nightmares. And in the big picture, you know, wolves, bears, and cougars take a relatively small amount of livestock compared to automobiles and domestic dogs. We're hoping we can create a better understanding where people can keep more corridors of land open for migration and just keep our wild spaces wild so we can have these animals back and other animals like them.
Let me see if I'm understanding you correctly. You're suggesting that, well, obviously the corridors are something that my listeners are pretty much well aware of, and that is the reconstruction of contiguous areas for these animals to roam so that they can move. This is what I'm going to propose in my own analysis here, and that is that what you're saying is that to leave the animals, and they will have to, in essence, fend for themselves. Those who wander beyond the safe zones may be taken down for various reasons, but maybe this is what I'm beginning to sense that I think is reasonable. These animals are so aware, I believe they are, truly aware of the world around them. They know where the dangers are, they kind of know where the boundaries are, and that through time it may be possible for them to establish their own awareness of the right places and the wrong places to go.
Absolutely.
I know, for example, when I worked in a park in Minnesota, it was amazing that during hunting season, when deer season would emerge, the deer somehow knew, and they would go right into the park maintenance areas and just herd up there, and they would stay. Now, I don't know how in the world they knew that or how they figured that out, but somehow they knew that at hunting season you go there because they couldn't be shot there. And perhaps through time, it may be that the wolves themselves will be able to learn where those boundaries are, because I think they may be sensitive to that. Is that, are we heading in the right direction here?
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, for instance, you know, with all of the best intentions, and I don't have the details right in front of me right now, but there was a female wolf that kept leaving Yellowstone, and, you know, they kept going back to get her and bringing her back, and I think she ended up having her litter outside the park, and she was captured again, and so were the pups, and they were brought back into the park. And you have to think, well, how many leg hold traps and how many tranquilizer darts, you know, before you really mess this wolf up?
Mm-hmm.
And you just, at some point you have to decide that if some wolves are going to make mistakes, they'll make mistakes, you know, but we have to let them be wolves. You know, we have to let them figure out their place. And, it's tough for us, especially here in Idaho, because, you know, they're talking about as soon as they can delist these animals, they want to open up a big game hunting season. And that's the worst thing you could do, because these are such family animals, as in we were discovering with elephants. You know, you kill the knowledge, you basically kill the family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with these wolf packs.
Yes, there would be no natural selection process if they were open to hunting.
Right.
It's just whatever animal happens to cross your path is taken down, as opposed to encouraging this natural selection, which certainly exists dramatically in the species.
Right. A lot of it just is over fear of an animal that's being reintroduced. I fear a lot of the controversy is the ranchers don't like the federal government probably more than they don't like wolves. And the wolves are really not killing that many sheep, say in Idaho. There was about 183 of them killed last year.
Wow.
Well, coyotes killed 5,000 sheep last year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, and no one's calling to kill off all the coyotes. But wolves are reintroduced, as they have been in Yellowstone. It has been very successful. I mean, that park is in the biology of that park is much better off than it ever was before. The herds of elk that were in the park were dying off from winter kill all the time, and now with the wolf back, the elk that used to hang around the river bottoms in the riparian area are now up on the slopes of the hills, looking after off and making sure they don't get snuck up on by wolves, and so they're surviving up there and getting away from this delicate river bottom. And now shoots of aspens and willows are coming back. Prior to the wolf, there wasn't a cottonwood tree that was younger than 70 or 80 years in age. Now that there's more trees in the river along the rivers, there's more shade. There's more, because of that, the water is cooler, there are more trout, and they're growing bigger, there are more songbirds. Prior to the wolf coming back, there was only one beaver dam in the whole northern section of the park. Now there are 10.
Hmm.
And so it's a hugely successful program where we have a natural boundary, we have boundaries that keep them safe, but the trouble is they don't know where those boundaries are, and they do wander out and get in trouble, but I think the trouble is exaggerated.
I don't think that anyone would have been able to predict the outcome in Yellowstone, that literally the landscape is being transformed because of the wolf reintroductions. You know, one of the things that the wolves are always fighting against, and that is the myth that these are killer animals, that if you happen to be walking along somewhere at night, the wolves are going to attack you. Quite honestly, to this date, I still don't know that there is an authenticated attack, unprovoked authenticated attack on humans by wolves.
Yeah, there's been no attack in North America of a healthy wild wolf going after a human being.
That to me is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, and how many people are hurt or killed by cougars or mountain lion? I mean, cougars or bears.
I think there are about 300,000 dog attacks a year.
Wow.
That's our best friend, right?
We don't have to be scientists, okay? We'll just have some fun here. I'm going to suggest that because that is, from a scientific perspective, really quite extraordinary that these animals that can take down bison and elk and all sorts of major creatures do not attack human beings. Right. Now, I don't know that it's just because of fear, or is it perhaps, let's go ahead and have some fun, is it perhaps that they actually feel a kinship with humans? What do you think?
Oh, boy, that's scary to go there.
But you know what? I think you could be absolutely right on, because in the Lewis and Clark journals, there are stories about how wolves would wander into their camp in the middle of the night and not attack anyone, but steal their shoes. You know, they'd want to steal their shoes, and, you know, the guys could, like, kill them by hitting them over the head with a stick. Wolves are very, very curious, and they're very family-oriented, and, you know, we're very similar, so I definitely think there could be kind of a kinship thing happen. I mean, you know, wolves definitely should never be considered pets, but we do have a camaraderie with each other that should be respected.
You know, the wolves in the packs, I mean, you mentioned, for example, the Omega, who just seems to be the brunt of all things bad, that when they need to pick on somebody, they go after the Omega. There is this incredible dynamic that exists within the wolf pack. Now, I'm trying to imagine, because we don't have to be scientists 100% of the time in this conversation, that as wolves perceive humans, they see a very similar, almost like brother-sister species that they don't connect with any other animals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even within the pack, very few animals are ever killed.
Right.
You know, although they could easily. They don't tend to kill their own. I guess apparently once in a while, if there is the quote-unquote lone wolf that may come into a pack, that can be a dangerous situation.
Right, and, you know, and it can happen, but just having a conversation and not trying to analyze it, I think that's could be quite right on.
I truly think that our behaviors are so similar, particularly our eye glances and the connections that we make with our eyes. We all know about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, romance begins with the eyes, and as well fear and all sorts of things. And I think these animals who are so aware of their environment, perhaps, I'm going to have fun, I'm going to say it, look to us as a special creature in their world. I otherwise, I can't explain why they haven't killed humans.
There I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Are you planning to expand on this or continue this investigation into the future here with either these wolves or others?
Well, we've always thought we'd go on from this, and now it's been 15 years of working with wolves. We dream of other projects, and we circle back to wolves. They seem to need a voice. We lived with them for those 6 years, and acquired all this footage and images, and that's why we put together this new book and this new film. They opened up their lives to us, and we were able to capture their images, so we feel that we owe it to them to continue talking about them and telling the stories they told us.
Yeah, and we've been going, traveling the country and for the book tour and doing lectures, and just really trying to get the word out there that this is an animal that needs to be looked at with respect. And as Jim said, these wolves gave us so very much that it's the very least we can do for them.
On your book tours, how are people responding to your...
It's really touching. People say, thank you for doing what you're doing. There should be more people like you. That makes us feel so good. And that happens from place to place. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and we also hear from people who, you know, who were on the fence about wolves, or really rather anti-wolf, and they see the book or the film, or they come to one of our lectures out of curiosity, and at the end they say thank you. You know, I didn't realize they were such family animals. I didn't know, and it changes them. And that's what we're trying to do.
I know that my connection with wolves, it's instinctive. I bond with their myth, their reality, their world. I think they carry a message for us, and we need to wake up and listen, quite honestly. For people who want to learn more about your work and perhaps are interested in seeing your films and getting your books, give us some entree.
Well, you can find our books on Amazon.com, of course, and our films as well, and also at the Discovery Channel. And you know, our new book is through the Mountaineers, and but we unfortunately don't have a website yet.
Well, we'll have to talk about that.
I know, everyone does.
Help you get this out there. Too much time in a yurt, perhaps, huh?
On
the Discovery Channel, do you expect that they will be repeating the Living with Wolves film?
I think they're planning to repeat it in December on Animal Planet, but I'm not really sure. But it is available through Discovery.com at their store as well as our previous film, Wolves at Our Door, and that's also available at Amazon and various bookstores. One thing I think is really important about these animals that they really showed us, which is something we could really take away and learn from them, is these animals really forgive each other. And it's so very hard for us to do that.
Talk about that.
Well, they'll have their squabbles, they'll have their disputes, and you can clearly see two wolves might be angry with each other. But 20 minutes, an hour later, you can see that they're friends again. They're licking each other's faces or they're lying together. And that's something, you know, it clearly showed us that, yes, they can have their little disputes, but they forgive. And how hard is it for us to do that with each other?
I'll tell you, I just got an emotional rush as I began to say, and they've been forgiving us endlessly.
Decades.
You know, for our transgressions, they do keep forgiving us and still welcome us as almost their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's extraordinary. So now let's give us your best thoughts. Give us your sort of spiritual poetry about wolves. But sometimes, you know, when people start talking about this, there's some things we don't want to say because it may sound we could be criticized. But we have real strong feelings. And I think it's important sometimes for us to go ahead and just speak those feelings and those perceptions or truths, because sometimes that's where the real truth lies. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to go ahead and say what you maybe don't say often, or whatever it is that you care to share.
You know, the most important thing about these animals is the amount of compassion and care they have for each other, for their family. And how they work cooperatively with one another, and how they really reflect who we are. We can watch wolves and see so much of ourselves within them. And I guess the hope that we can take that and turn it into something good, and, you know, really realize that this animal belongs here. It belongs here as much as we do. And as soon as we realize that and learn to live with this animal, I think it'll be a much better place. Because as I said before, this animal, wolves forgive. And that's something we need to learn.
Mm. You know, as we look out to the future, I think the future of many animal species, there has to be sort of a whole new way of thinking. Mm-hmm. And to some extent, the scientific world, which serves us well in so many respects, but sometimes this desire to kind of make sure that the there is no crossover between the wild animals and humans could run into trouble, in the sense that perhaps the vision of the new future is that we must learn to cohabit, share the space, and maybe that's something that we have to learn to do better, because there is no future for these animals, quite honestly, if we cannot learn to live with them. They're here to share their lives, their truths, their understanding. They have much to give us. And I think we need to learn to be open to accept that and live in peace with these animals, because otherwise, as with tigers and gorillas and chimpanzees and other animals, that we keep kind of setting them off in enclosures and other places where they will not survive forever, because those enclosures have become smaller and smaller and smaller, whether it be a national park or a sanctuary. Perhaps we have to kind of, this is my own personal little mantra of today, to learn better to cohabit with these animals. We don't have to kill them all the time.
Absolutely. They need the space, and as we encroach further and further, into their territory. You know, we both lose out. So, yes, absolutely.
Well, Jim and Jamie Dutcher, I want to thank you so much for adding your voice to the Wild Side News. You've done some great work. I'm anxious to keep on learning about what you folks do. In the past, we haven't even mentioned this, but you're Emmy Award-winning filmmakers and recordists. And I want to thank you so much for your work and as well your thoughts today on the Wild Side News.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sydney.
This is our pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
With so much at stake, the future of the wonder here on Earth, this voice of the Earth seems so meek compared to what the Earth needs right now. The Earth could use a good howling, the song of the wolf heard round the world to their closest friend and most dangerous enemy. Listen to the saw-toothed wolves who speak for all the wolves of the world. They can talk to us. They do talk to us. If only more people took the time to listen. This is Sydney Wildsmith saying adios until next Thursday or any time on the archives when your voice of the Earth is heard round the world here on the Wild Side News.